Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
He is the great journalist, expert on Mexico coverage. He is Tom Marshall. He joins us now. Tom, how are you?
Hi, Glenn. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, looking forward to this game coming up. I think it's settled perfectly, really. Tigres against LAFC. André Pierre-Gignac, basically the star name in Mexican football over what the last 5 years against Carlos Vela, one of the all-time great MLS players. So can't wait, to be honest.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one tonight. I'm ready for this one as well, and I'm glad to have you on here tonight. Let me first take it from the Tigres perspective, with your knowledge of Tuca Ferretti and Tigres and all their great success. And of course, you've been to Houston many times covering them and covering other games here. You know the connection we have to Monterrey, Mexico here. But yes, how much pressure is on Tuca Ferretti and Tigres to get to the FIFA Club World Cup and win this game tonight just based on the fact that they have come close and haven't gotten over the finish line?
Yes, no, I mean, it's basically all the talk ahead of the game has been about that. Tigres have been the team of the decade in Liga MX. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I think it's 5 titles over the last 9 years in Liga MX, but, this is now the 4th final in 5 years in the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, they deserve a lot of praise for getting there, but obviously they've lost the last 3 finals. So there is a certain amount of pressure. The only thing I would say is that, this is a team with an average age of over 30. They've played in a lot of finals, and although there is that kind of obvious pressure, they've been there. They're not going to kind of wilt under that pressure, I don't think. For the institution, from the Mexican side of things as well, it's almost like, the rival fans, Rayados fans up there in Nuevo León, they rip, they make fun of Tigres fans for never having won a continental title. And Tigres fans are obviously absolutely desperate to kind of end that and, take a trip to the Club World Cup, which, does mean a lot to these Mexican clubs.
Yeah, no question about it. So Tigres has a very impressive midfield, and to your point, it is an older, experienced team. So I'm looking at the names: Aquino, Carioca, Pizarro. Quiñones had a tremendous game against New York City FC. He was uncontrollable. Nobody could deal with him. How much of this game just comes down to basically who wins the middle third of the field and who wins midfield?
Yes, I mean, I think, if you look over that period of Tuca Ferretti's time in charge of Tigres, the team's dominating possession. It's very rare that you see a Tigres team not having more than 50% of the ball, and it's often up to 60 or over. And I think the same thing for LAFC. I think Bob Bradley is one of his greatest feats there at LAFC has been that what you're getting with them, and they're a really attractive side. They also like to get the ball, take the game to the opposition, and so that battle of the midfield is going to be really important. And then I think the really exciting thing about this game is, No matter what happens, no matter who's actually winning that midfield battle, which obviously is going to give one side a better chance than the other, you've got such quality players up front. I mean, you look at Carlos Vela, and I think it's like 54 goals in 70 appearances in MLS, 20-something assists. You look at Gignac's record, you look at Diego Rossi, the MLS top scorer. You look elsewhere on Tigres, Quiñones, Leo Fernandez, that's a designated player in MLS right there, 21, 22 years old. So, I mean, there's so much talent on the field tonight. I don't know, I'm hoping it's a good advert for CONCACAF after that LAFC America game, which, to be honest, I thought there were quite a few players on that pitch that didn't do themselves justice, I didn't think.
Yeah, that was a very interesting night. So, we were joking around in the prior segment. If Bob Bradley or Tuca Ferretti gets sent off, who's going to hand him his his walkie-talkie tonight?
Oh, yeah.
You think about that literally, and you just say to yourself, What was allowed to happen in that last game in some ways sets a precedent, and it certainly hurts your credibility, I think.
Yes. I'll tell you what, Glenn, it was quite interesting, and, you know, I was quite, you know, happy to hear from Tuukka Ferretti heading into this game. He basically said, look, you know, he was asked about the referee and the officiating, and I 100% agree with him. And I know this might be a very idealistic, you know, in the modern game and, you know, with so much on the line, but he basically said, look, it's up to the players as well. It's like the players have to set the example. And I thought that what happened with America against LAFC was, I'm not, I know a lot of people online are blaming Club America squarely, but it was happening on both sides. And for me, what happened was, it was an example of when two teams are used to having VAR, video assistant referee, week in, week out, and then all of a sudden you get games where VAR isn't in use. Then obviously the players are trying to take advantage of that, and they're trying to go back to try and trick the referee. And I thought that's exactly what happened. And he just kind of, for me, it just kind of snowballed. And there was one incident followed another incident, and it just got ridiculous. You know, I think we saw it in the quarterfinal as well. I mean, you know, Carlos Vela went down pretty easily for a penalty in the quarterfinal against Cruz Azul. And I just think, you know, I just think the players know in the back of their minds now that they might as well. You know, they might as well, because there's no VAR and they can't go back and check it. So, I don't know, but I was happy to hear Ferretti say, look, the officiating, hopefully, there's no decisions that kind of affect the result of the game. But at the end of the day, it's also up to the players to set a good example, and then the coaching staff to follow that example. So, yeah, hopefully we're talking about the football and what's happened on the field at the end of this one.
Talking to Tom Marshall, and I would agree with you 100%, and I think the fact that Tuukka Ferretti said that is important because of the stature that he has and the esteem that he holds. But if you think about CONCACAF and you think about the person who, and however we've gotten to this situation where there's no VAR, you know players are going to do that. You know they're all thinking about it. You know that both coaches know about it. So you're basically, it's tantamount to suicide to say to players now that, okay, you don't have VAR, and say, okay, behave and don't cheat. And we all know somebody's going to dive tonight. There's going to be something that's going to occur tonight. And I just taking and not having VAR, it's just you're setting yourself up for problems. And you're setting referees up for difficult nights as well, I think. All right.
Yes.
Do you want to comment on that?
No, just quickly. No, I just think it's the CONCACAF region as well. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I do think that once the tournament was held in Orlando in a stadium that uses well week in, week out, I think it should have been a kind of, it should have tried hard at that point to get well working for these games. But I mean, it's just, for me, when it's really difficult, CONCACAF. You've got, you know, the richest nation in the world, the United States. You've got Canada. You've got Mexico, a giant football nation. And then you've got some of the smallest islands in the world, under the FIFA umbrella. So I don't know. It always seems like we kind of have to balance that between getting all the different interest groups, and I think that differentiates CONCACAF from, you know, CONMEBOL or even UEFA to a degree. So it is tough, but yes, I mean, I think
I'm not sure you have to have it. I'm not sure you have to have it in the early rounds in Barbados and places like that. But I do think once you get into a specific stage of this tournament, I don't think it's hard to implement. Most of the players then at that point have had experience with it. And at that point, you have to have referees that have had experience with it. I think sometimes CONCACAF can rely upon the, you know, oh, it's so different in the country, you know, to your point, which is true. But I think it sometimes becomes a fallback position in a way that it's slightly negligent, and it doesn't advance the interests of football and the way tournaments are run in this region of the world.
Yeah, no, for sure, And, you know, I think we saw that last weekend on Saturday. And, yeah, it was a shame because at the end of the day, it was two, you know, really, really, really big clubs in this side of the world. So, no, hopefully tonight it's, I don't know, hopefully the players are on best behavior and it doesn't spill over. But, I mean, we'll see. I wouldn't surprise me one bit if it does, though, you know.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the tactics tonight. I'm expecting a Bob Bradley team to be highly competitive, to be protagonists, to get do exactly what they did against Club America, and that's get tight on people. Don't give people time and space to get their head up and really try to break this great rhythm that, you know, we know Tigres is capable of with all the talent they have. What do you see?
Yes, I mean, I think that's how LAFC play, and that's how they play against Tigres. What I would say, though, is I think if you look at Tigres' season in Liga MX, it's not been a great season. And for me, if Tigres have got a problem, it's actually the opposite. It's against teams that sit back, that sit really deep in a low block and just try and restrict the space. Tigres are better when teams are actually coming at them. So I've got a feeling that it's going to play into that's going to play into Tigres' hands a little bit. I thought Club América were poor. Like, I thought they were really not good. You know, I thought they defended okay in that first half, but when they got the ball, they were abysmal. You know, they played long ball football. They were pumping it up, and there's no way Tigres are going to do that. You know, Tigres are much more kind of established in the way that they want to in the way that they want to go about playing. So, I mean, this is a fascinating thing. It's going to be like an arm wrestle. Which team can kind of get hold of the ball? You know, show that composure, because at the end of the day, in the final, and both these clubs are looking for the first CONCACAF Champions League trophy. And yes, I see it like that, kind of an arm wrestle, which one is going to take advantage. But like I said before, then you've got that wild card, and you've got exceptional players. I mean, Brown on one side can flip this game. LAFC can play terribly. You know, that Carlos Vela can do some bit of magic and they'll win this game. I mean, I'm under no doubt about that at all. On the other side, you say pretty much the same about Gignac. I'd argue Gignac needs a bit more kind of support play. I think Vela can do something. We've seen some of his individual goals over the last couple of years, whereas I think Gignac does need a bit of kind of support. But I think that's the X factor about this game. I mean, you just don't know about those individuals, how they're going to perform.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. So do you think there's a possibility Bradley defends in a lower block or maybe a middle third block to test that mettle of Tigres if they have watched a lot of Liga MX, which I'm sure they have?
I think, you know, Bob Bradley is, you know, he said he's been watching Tigres regularly over a number of years as well. So I think it's possible. I don't think they're going to sit back in a completely low block. At the same time, I personally don't think there's any point. Tigres are a team that dominate possession, but they're not necessarily very vertical. You know, Tuca Ferretti hates his players making mistakes, and they get criticised sometimes for not with the style of play. And a lot of people in Mexico say it's defensive, which I think is complete nonsense. But they do use possession to wear down the opposition. They use possession to kind of slowly move the opposition out of position. It's not kind of, you know, it's not a vertical style where the fullbacks are charging forward. It's more like a very, very precise, you know, positional play, working the ball slowly forward. So for me, there's no point when the centre-backs are, you know, knocking it around between themselves and the goalkeeper. There's no real point pressing when Tigres are doing that. But obviously, as soon as they get into the opposition half, then, you know, I think LAFC's DNA is to go and hunt down the ball.
Do you get the sense that Javier Aquino is going to start? What do we know?
Aquino, I think we're going to find out very soon. I think Aquino is definitely a doubt. I think it's only 50-50. Aquino understands what Ferretti wants, and he's been around the club for so long, and so I think Ferretti will want him in there. They've lost a couple of players recently as well, with a couple of injuries. Julián Quiñones is out. You know, they got rid of Eduardo Vargas, so Aquino becomes even more important. But I think that the one that everyone's looking to is André Pierre Gignac, who's also got an injury problem, a muscle issue. But I mean, if he can hop on one leg, Gignac is going to make it on that field tonight as a starter. Because Gignac, this is the irony of it, Glenn, as well. And it does make me laugh a little bit. You know, you've got the LAFC side where you've got a Mexican captain who's the best player, and if LAFC does it, it's going to be a Mexican player lifting that title, the first MLS title in 20 years. And then on the team, it's like your star player is a French guy who's also a Mexican citizen, and he's got the Virgin of Guadalupe, you know, tattooed onto his right calf. So it's just it's a bizarre kind of way of looking at, you know, the two kind of principal protagonists in this kind of this drama that we're going to see tonight.
What do you think Gignac's future is, Tom?
What's that say?
What do you think his future is?
The future?
Yeah, for Gignac, now that he's getting older.
Yeah, I mean, Gignac, I think there's a strong possibility that he stays within the Tigres organization, perhaps as a coach. I mean, this is a guy who, he's a real personality. He doesn't speak much to the media and stuff, but he's a real personality. He loves it in Mexico. I mean, this guy just, whenever anybody asks him about living in Mexico, he absolutely loves it. I think a couple of his kids have been born here. And, you know, he didn't need to get Mexican citizenship. He was like, my kids were born here. I feel like I'm a Mexican. I'm going to get my citizenship. So I can see him staying. And this is kind of a long shot, but there's even talk of him possibly taking over from Tuca Ferretti maybe in a few years. But this is another interesting thing about tonight, because when Tigres won the 2019 Apertura title, Gignac said on the field after the game, he was like, next up, we've got to win the CONCACAF Champions League. He says, I'm not going to hang up my boots until we win that damn trophy. That just tells you how desperate Gignac is to win this trophy and to represent Tigres at the Club World Cup. And I think that would kind of close the cycle of, you know, what has been one of the most historic and best foreign players in Mexico's first division.
Well, what a run they have had with him, too. I mean, it just, and there is just something, there is an aura about the guy when he plays. He just has an aura, and some of the spectacular things that he can do, and still at this age, successful. I love seeing a guy that's older like him that is just so successful still. His brain's on a different level than people at a lot of times in games. So when I heard the doubtful, you know, usually makes me lean towards, yeah, they're probably going to play.
Yeah. No, yeah, it'll be now, absolutely desperate.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that this is going to be another great storyline for this game tonight. You didn't say Luis Quiñones was injured, did you?
No, Luis is playing. Julian is...
Julian, The brother.
He didn't make the tournament.
Okay, so, I almost fell over, and I was like, "Ooh, that would have been a big break," because he was a one man wrecking machine against New York. I mean, against New York FC, he was spectacular. I mean, they couldn't control the guy.
No, and Tigres, you know, that's what they're about. I think there has been a bit of a kind of an advancement in the playing style, and I think you look at the likes of Quiñones. And I think there is slightly more directness than before, and I think that's something that Tuca's tried to implement over the last year, 18 months, and I think he still needs to do it, because there is still a sense that, you know, like I said before, if there is a team that does sit back, sometimes they lack that kind of little bit of creativity, that little bit of magic that's not getting the ball to Gignac in the area, if you know what I mean. So, everywhere you look at Tigres, I mean, Carlos Salcedo, the former Mexico international. Saka Rodriguez is Mexico's right back. Now, Joel Guzman, for me, the best goalkeeper in Liga MX, capable of a big mistake, but still, you're a very good goalkeeper. And, you know, Carioca in midfield, Pizarro, they're a very, very good team. And, you know, if LAFC can do this tonight, I think you got to just hold up your hands and say, you know, congratulations, you've beaten the best, do you know what I mean? You've beaten Club América, you've beaten Cruz Azul, you've beaten León, and now you've beaten Tigres. That's just an amazing run. And, you know, nobody I don't think could say anything different to that.
So then let's take it to the big question, and we'll take it even further, because we know that fans of both leagues are going to make this a verdict on which league is better. But I think a game like this just can do so much, again, for rivalry, for this region of the world, the eyeballs that are going to be on it. I mean, I can't even imagine how many TV sets are going to be turned on here in Houston with our connections to Monterrey, Mexico as well.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, honestly, even going on online on the social networks, is like, sometimes you can't even have an opinion. Like, I put a couple of tweets out about the LAFC America game, and, you know, I consider myself to, you know, be neutral, and you know, and I was getting attacked. I was getting attacked. So what did they like?
You had some keyboard warriors going after you on Twitter. You need me to come out there and flex my muscles for you, Tom? I'll defend you, man.
What were they
upset about? That's what I want to know. What were they upset about?
With Edward Apuesta's red card when he got sent off.
Yeah, of course.
I put a tweet out saying that Ochoa baited him, basically. He took the bait. And then everyone was going crazy. But my point was, he shouldn't have motioned. Ochoa went there to wind him up, to try and get any kind of reaction. And at the end of the day, he did move towards him. I'm not saying that deserved a red card, because for me, it wasn't a red card. But at the same time, you're giving the referee a decision to make. And so, that was my kind of take on it. I think if you're a youth coach, if one of the things you tell a young player is that in the face of provocation, no matter how bad it is, don't react. You know what I mean? That's what I was getting. I've got MLS fans that weren't happy with me. But I tell you what, Ben, this is the thing as well, when we talk about the MLS Liga Next rivalry, those in charge of the league, when we see kind of just the waves of passion, of intensity that accompanies kind of this tournament and these big games, they're licking the lips. This is what is going to drive any kind of future MLS Liga MX partnership or wherever this thing is going to go. You know, this is at the heart of it, that kind of intensity people really, really do feel it. And in some ways it's good. You know, it's good to see people showing absolute genuine interest in it as well.
Now, I would say you have to give LA the win in the category of emotional control on this night.
Yeah.
And then I want to take you to this. We're talking to Tom Marshall. Are Mexican fans mad that Carlos Vela is in Major League Soccer with LAFC, essentially with the enemy's league?
I'm not trying to use the word mad. I think what I'd say with Vela is, I don't know, I think because he's been there like a few years now, I think, you know, everybody knows Vela, everybody knows all about his history. The thing with Vela is, and it goes back to the national team, Vela's never going to have that kind of image that other, you know, Mexican players that have been anywhere near as good as him, to be honest, have got. You know, Vela didn't play for the Mexican national team in 2014 at the World Cup. He didn't want to play. He had his reasons. You know, after the 2018 World Cup, he again said he didn't want to play. Again, I'm not criticizing him on a personal level, but if you're a Mexico fan, you know, or you're a fan of any nation, if a player who's obviously a very, very good player that can help the national team doesn't want to play for that national team, there's always going to be a certain amount of fans that just can't understand it. There's so many people out there that would absolutely love to put on the Mexico shirt and would do absolutely anything to just play 5 minutes for the Mexico national team. And so obviously with Vela, it does sit uneasy, and obviously you feed the kind of Mexican media into that, and it is a machine.
Wasn't the story about Vela was the fact that the Mexican Federation threw him under the bus a little bit in an incident that occurred? And didn't people realize that? That maybe that's the reason why he decided not to play for the Mexican national team?
Yeah, I mean, that story was definitely out there. I would say from Vela's point as well, he never said, and I think that's harmed him, because he's never come out and said, this is what happened, this is why I made that decision. And especially about that incident, he's just never spoken about it. And so I don't think he's helped himself in terms of that. But again, it's his personal decision, you've got to respect it as well. He doesn't like speaking to the media anyway.
He probably doesn't want to say anything about that incident, though, because if he's got to talk about the incident, he's got to talk about his teammates. And he's not going to do that. And that, to me, is pretty honorable, actually. Well, maybe in some ways it is, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we can rationalize it, but at the end of the day, I think the average fan is always going to not understand that. And there's a lot of things that happen with the Mexican national team, and, you know, I've been around it for a lot of years, and you can understand the frustration of the players. But there's not many that have refused it, you know. And I think it's still, I'm not saying every Mexico fan either. I just think there is certain elements of obviously the Mexican fan base which will be always have a kind of strange relationship with Carlos Vela, and just always have in the back of the mind that when he was ripping up La Liga in 2014, he wasn't at the World Cup. You know, could he have been the difference maker against the Netherlands? You know, we'll never know.
That's true. Tom, I got to hit a break here because we got to pay some bills. Great stuff from you as always. Listen, I want to wish you the best over the holidays with that newborn, and I want to thank you for all your great contributions to this show. I know my listeners love hearing when Tom Marshall's going to be on the show.
No, thanks a lot, Glenn, for the invite, and happy holidays to you and your family and all the listeners over there in Texas. Hopefully I'll be up there in the new year, not too distant future, eating some of that good barbecue.
Hey, we got that. We can hook you up with that. We got a lot of good food here. We'll hook you up with some barbecue, Tom, and we would love to have you back in Houston. All right, have a good night, Tom.
Thanks, Ken.